Welcome back to the Sweet Tea Series, everybody. My name is Ariana Silva. Today we are doing a movie review of Angel Studios' new film, Cabrini. And with me to review the movie is my coworker and friend, Marie Markelis. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So usually whenever we're having women on the show, I'll give the background of everything that they've done, because a lot of what we're talking about has to do with their current work or past work. You have a pretty cool job, but it's not directly related. But why don't you explain what you do here at the foundation?
Yeah, so I'm the director of research and publications. So slightly different role than most. I'm kind of like the in-house editor for all the research papers that come through. So I edit them. I check them for factual errors. I have a little research team that also checks the papers. That's pretty much what we do.
I feel like you and I are both almost generalists when it comes to the policy things that we're doing here.
Yeah.
So like from film, I obviously don't go as deep into the research of it, but I get to see a little bit of everything kind of surface level. And then you go a level deeper, but you do get to kind of that overview.
Yeah.
Are there any policy areas that you're really liking or that you're doing a lot of work for right now?
Yeah. Right now we've gotten a lot of papers coming through for the taxpayer protection program or project. And so that's been really cool, just learning about housing affordability and like ranked choice voting. But I'm expecting some big border security and immigration papers coming through. So I'm excited to see what happens with that.
Nice. And I feel like some of the work, which we'll get into later, kind of does reflect on some of the social stances from Cabrini and like what should we do about the fact that there are going to be there are going to be impoverished people and people who are in need, and how do we address those those people
exactly.
So let's get into our movie review. Marie and I went to go see this movie on Sunday. So for us, we're recording this on is it Wednesday already?
Yeah, I think
I feel
so.
Like it's still fresh though in our minds. We've been talking about it.
Yeah.
So just like a synopsis of the film, this is what it has on the website. Cabrini, from Alejandro Monteverde, award-winning director of Sound of Freedom, comes the powerful epic of Francesca Cabrini, an Italian immigrant who arrives in New York City in 1889 and is greeted by disease, crime, and impoverished children. Cabrini sets off on a daring mission to convince the hostile mayor to secure the housing and healthcare for the society's most vulnerable. With broken English and poor health, Cabrini uses her entrepreneurial mind to build an empire of hope unlike anything the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
So that is what Cabrini is about. And for us, I guess, Saint Mother Cabrini would be, or Mother Saint Cabrini. Do you know the order of what?
I think it would just be Saint Francis Cabrini. I'm thinking about like Mother Teresa, but we call her Saint Teresa of Calcutta.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe
I don't remember what were the titles going.
Yeah.
But so I think it is important for us to just give that background of we are seeing it also through a Catholic lens.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might inform a little bit of how we're interpreting the film. But the other cool thing is you are connected to the film in a different way as well. So you're descended from Italian immigrants who came to America during the same era. So do you want to talk a little bit about your family history?
Yeah. So it was my great-great-grandparents that came over from Sicily in the early to mid 1800s. And they came through Ellis Island and ended up in New Jersey and have been there ever since. Well, some of my family live in Iowa now, but my great-great-grandfather's name was Matteo Macaluso, and my last name is Markelis, so they Americanized it. I think it was either my great-grandparents that did it or a subsequent generation, but big family of Italian Catholics coming over, so it was cool seeing Cabrini during that time that my family came over and just seeing what life could have been like for them. I don't know too much about their time whenever they initially came over from Sicily, but
so do you feel like you learned a lot from the film, seeing how Italians are treated in that era of New York?
My father and my grandfather have kind of touched on the discrimination that Italians, Catholics, experienced when they came over, but it's one of those things where it's hard to kind of visualize that when we don't experience that at all today. I loved the movie for that aspect. It was very personal. Getting to see that.
So let's start with the movie review with the first impressions. So how would you rank the film? Would you recommend it to people?
Gosh, I definitely recommend it. Very impressed by Angel Studios. I think it's really cool seeing Christian filmmakers go out and make films that are actually worthwhile seeing. I mean, not to rag on movies like God's Not Dead, but it's a little cheesy. So seeing really cool movies, it was the same filmmaker who made Sound of Freedom, which was phenomenal, who made Cabrini. And so I just think the quality of the film was excellent. The score was beautiful. They had a song by Andrea Bocelli at the end, which I was very impressed by. The costumes, and it was all primarily Italian actors too. I looked up the lead actress, Christiana Dellana, I think is her name, and she's full-blooded Italian, and so had to learn English. And so when they're speaking Italian, like, that's their native tongue. But for the content of the film, I thought was fantastic. Just had depicted the life of this incredible saint in a really beautiful and profound way. I think my only qualms with it was that they almost depicted her more as a philanthropist than a saint, or a philanthropist than a nun, because she wanted to do good for the Italian community, and she had a deep love for the poor and the needy and the forgotten. But they didn't really explain, like, why she saw that. And she kind of had a couple quips here and there, like, they're children of God, and so we should love them. But she didn't really dive into the nitty-gritty of, like why we belong to each other. And so I wanted to see more of that spiritual aspect of it. And I wanted to see more of her living her life as a nun and, like, the spiritual exercises that go in with that. But overall, still a great film, and I think depicts it well.
And there's a piece of me that feels like I need to give a little bit of, I guess, grace to the film, because you only have, like, they went a little bit over 2 hours, I think, with the film. But you only have a certain amount of time to be able to depict the life of someone who was an incredible woman who had her mission ended up going across the world like she had always envisioned. But if I start off just from the first impression, I think I was enjoying it and I was entertained throughout the film.
Yeah.
But afterwards, I don't think that I would consider it one of the, like, the best, like, it's definitely not going to be one of the best films of all time. Mm-hmm. It's not the same way, like, we're a Sound of Freedom. It was such an important message of, oh my goodness, this is, like, such a big thing that everyone has to see this film. Mm-hmm. But Cabrini, I would recommend it, but it wouldn't be, like, in my top films I've ever seen.
Yeah, sort of list.
But it was, and I, again, whenever there is something that is at all related to Christianity and it's actually good, we have to give it props for being that way.
Absolutely. Because
there's so many not.
Yeah.
So I noticed the Rotten Tomatoes score. I think it was like 98% audience. And then the critic score surprised me that, because you know how critic scores usually for films like this would be way lower. It was still 91%.
Wow.
So I don't know if I would actually rank it that high, because I think once something gets in the 90 range, it's something that I want to see every so often.
Right. Almost like Oscar level. Yeah.
Yes. And I don't think it was quite there.
Right.
But there were amazing technical aspects of the film. So I kind of want to break those down with you as well. So let's start with acting. You were kind of touching on this actress. Were there any other, like, performances that moved you in it, or anything stood out to you?
The children were, they were very, very good at what they did. I think with child actors, you know, they're so young, and so it's hard to be experienced or polished at that age. But it starts off, like, the opening scene is this little boy and he's pushing this cart and his mother is dying in it, and, like, the boy is just clearly distressed and crying and screaming in Italian, and he can't speak English, and he's, like, grabbing everyone he can find trying to get his mother to a hospital, and no one's giving him the time of day. And he even goes into a hospital at one point and they push him out and they're like, we don't take you, scum, basically. And that was really striking. I was like, these kids are incredible.
And you know what's funny? I didn't even think about the child actors in this film, but that kind of shows how amazing they are, because you weren't thinking of them as child actors.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Like, I saw I saw the Percy Jackson adaptation, the series, a couple weeks ago, and, like, they're all 12 years old, because that's how old the characters were in the book, but they were clearly 12 years old. But, I mean, these kids are younger. They're little orphans, and they're, like, 10. They're 8, and they were so good.
And his character in the film, that was Paolo, right?
Yes, that was Paolo.
he was amazing. That
I know.
So great performance by him. The thing that we didn't get to see as much, I think, was the other nuns who surrounded Cabrini.
Yeah.
But that's more storyline than their acting.
Right.
But like the girl that they had, that there was like a woman who was a prostitute who becomes like reformed through her exposure to Mother Cabrini and the other sisters. And I think that the actors did a pretty good job of, usually whenever there's someone who's going to be like a very bigoted person, it mm-hmm. becomes very caricature and unbelievable.
Right.
I actually thought that the mayor did a really good job at depicting that character without being a caricature of someone.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That, and the same thing for the actor who played the Pope and the Archbishop too.
Yes.
I felt like they knew their roles, and it wasn't like something they were trying on and didn't quite fit. It was mm-hmm. the sort of thing where they probably, I mean, I would have guessed that they had played roles like those before because it was so natural.
Right. Yeah. So, and again, because I felt like Sound of Freedom, it was, again, a great film. A lot mm-hmm. of, there were some really good performances in it, but the children actors were not as good as the ones were in this.
Right.
And for a film like that, it was going to be much harder to direct someone like with Sound of Freedom, where there's like a lot mm-hmm. of trauma going on because you don't want to tell the kids, child actors too much.
Right. Right.
But for this one, I think they did a great job of incorporating them to the story.
Yeah.
So, another aspect that I think gave it the audience and critic score that it received was the cinematography
mm-hmm.
because there were some beautiful,
oh my gosh,
beautifully composed shots and very intentional. And I think it was, it felt like a real film, not like a Christian trying to make a film.
No, I agree. There was one shot of a train coming out of a mountain, and it was gorgeous, and you see the whole landscape. And I thought like it was a scene from Harry Potter at first. I was so many shots. I was like, where did they film this? And it was so well done.
So like set design was another big part of the immersion into this mm-hmm. world, and even the costuming I think was another good mm-hmm. good thing about it.
I agree. Yeah.
So they did again a great job of world building, of putting you into this era.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I feel like there is that temptation now to caricature things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it did a good job of balancing that a little bit with the men who are like a little bit more complicated than just, oh, this person's entirely horrible, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So the big thing that I left, though, considering was, I guess just, is this a Christian film? Like, mm-hmm. would that actually be the way mm-hmm. that I would describe this as a genre? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it is a Christian film. I mean, objectively, it's about the life of a Catholic saint. But I think a lot of the themes that they touched on, you could argue would be distinctly Christian. Like, I think, for example, about, like, one scene that stood out to me was there was an older boy who was, like, 13 or 14, and his name was Enzo, and not to spoil it, but he dies in an explosion, and there's a scene where Cabrini is just, she's sitting on the front steps of this dilapidated hospital with Paolo, the little boy, and she's sobbing, and there's another scene where they find the body of a dead girl, and she just breaks down and cries, and you see her heart for these children and for the needy. And I kept thinking of the theme of like spiritual motherhood, you know, and I mean, she's a nun, she's a virgin, she's celibate, she like will never be married, will never have children, will never really have a family of her own. But in this role, she's a spiritual mother to everyone she comes in contact with. And I think that can be a distinctly Christian theme that we don't see anywhere else. And I think because it comes from the Christian understanding of I am my brother's keeper and these souls are entrusted to me just like I'm entrusted to them. So I think that was one of the major things that stood out to me that I was like, okay, this is the hallmark of a Christian movie.
Mm, it's a, like just that depiction of motherhood mm-hmm. that is only could be present in that way in a Christian film.
Right.
That's interesting because I let's stick on the motherhood aspect mm-hmm. of it for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There was another thing that was just a really it was something in the script that was just kind of a small but very moving moment. So there's one of the other sisters, they're trying to get this orphanage ready to be mm-hmm. able to welcome kids. And the one who's going to start making the clothing has two different pieces of fabric. Yeah. And she comes to Mother Cabrini and says, which one? This one, like kind of suggesting one. She's like, mm-hmm. this one we can do. Mm-hmm. It's a lot cheaper. And Mother Cabrini says, no, we're going to do the other one because the children will be able to notice
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and we want them to know that we think that they deserve the best.
Right. Yeah. It's like recognizing the inherent dignity in every human being.
But it wasn't just that. It's just almost a, I guess just this concept of it, when a mother like cares for her children, sometimes it's not all about like the numbers. You're wanting to go above and beyond for them, mm-hmm. even if it doesn't quite make the most logical sense It's something that is unique to motherhood and how a mother would treat her own children. And Cabrini really takes on that role for these kids.
Right. And I think kind of going ahead a little bit, I was the question that came up in my mind was, you know, the it's kind of turned into a joke now, but the question of what is a woman? And thinking about, like, Cabrini, so many times in the film, she was rejected or denied because expressly she was a woman. Like, that was the main basis of it. And so thinking about, like, what is a woman? And going back to, like, it's not just physical attributes. It's matters of the heart and characteristics, like the intangibles. And so, like, spiritual motherhood is one of those things, and, like, a certain sensitivity to things, and empathy and compassion and peace and a quiet strength that I think a lot of women embody, which I think in more secular films, they're so quick to disregard those things. But with this movie, which I think, you could say this is another reason why I would consider it a Christian film, is because they elevate those things that define a woman. And I think our world is so comfortable with saying, well, if you look like a woman and talk like a woman, then you're a woman. But that's not exactly it. It's so much deeper than that, you know?
Right. And to kind of continue on this point of her exemplifying the these, like, very feminine attributes in a very powerful and moving way. So this is a quote from her real life, because I was going through, like, different biographies and stuff of her. So she said, "What we as women cannot do on a large scale to help solve grave social ills is being done in our small sphere of influence in every state and city where we have open houses. In them, we have shelter and care for orphans, the sick, and the poor." And I think it was also just this recognition of, I can't always do the biggest things that I can, but I'm going to do the most that I can in the places where I am.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly correct.
And I think that contributed to her being just a good leader as well for her community. But the one thing that did stand out to me is, as much as it reflected on those aspects of her and could be seen as Christian, the reason why it's hard for me to make that decision of classifying this as a Christian film is that usually I feel like Christian films will go, they're very on the nose, like very, it almost painted to unrealistic ways.
Yeah.
This one I felt like wasn't, didn't incorporate her prayer and spiritual life enough to quite be where I would call it a Christian film.
Yeah.
And there were even some problematic lines with that. So again, so like her real life quote, again, very humble, very, It's I don't think ambitious is the right word, but it's just it's desiring to do the best that you can with what you have and like push forward from that. But it's not prideful. Versus in the film, there were some times where I felt like it was giving pride.
Well, and then the Pope even said that too. He was like, "I don't know where your faith ends and your ambition begins."
Right. But as an audience member, I was questioning that for her too.
Right.
Felt like an awkward position to be in.
Yeah.
Especially because that's not something that's rectified, or like that's something that she's going through. It's just said.
Yeah, he just kind of says it, and then she just says, "Well, I have these big dreams," but you're right. I wish there was a bit more, like, "I dream this big because, like, I recognize, like, this ties in with my prayer," or something. I don't know if she had any experience of divine revelation, but, like, tying it back to the ultimate good, which is God.
And so I had a few, like, what I'll call just, I guess, problematic lines isn't the thing that I would call it. I actually labeled this on my cards, lines I hate.
Yeah.
So, but she, whenever these nuns are getting ready to come to America to accept this mission, which it very much seems like is a mission from God, but what Cabrini's encouraging them, she says, "We must trust in ourselves the purpose of our mission."
Yeah.
And as I'm reading this on screen, because she's saying it in Italian, you're seeing the subtitles, I was like, I hope that was a mistranslation because...
Yeah. I think, like, right before you see a tiny little icon of Jesus in the back, but it's, like, you just pass by it.
Right. Yeah. And so I was actually watching some people, because I was like, I'm not sure if I'm the only one feeling this way. And someone online was saying they did a good job of, like, creating a really Christian background for this film. But that's what it was. It was the background.
Yeah,
it wasn't
that's
the
a good
forefront.
Point.
So that was one line where... I feel like the real Mother Cabrini, based on her work and just her talking about humility. And there's actually one quote I was reading from her where she pointed to the fact that if she noticed that this one nun person who was applying to be a sister was very, I guess the ambition that you were seeing of her in the movie, but just someone who seemed to do it and prop up themselves, even though they wanted to do something that would be good. And she was saying that she wouldn't take someone on who didn't have humility about their mission.
Right.
So it just felt like it wasn't something that the real Mother Cabrini would have said. And I feel like instead she would have said, we must trust ourselves in the Lord, you know?
Right, right. Exactly. And I think too, I mean, part of the mission of serving the poor, like you have to humble yourself. There's no room for pride. You've got to make yourself so small because that's where you're going to be meeting people. And the only way to truly humble yourself, but be able to continue your mission in an effective way is to look to the cross and rely completely on the Lord for that.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the other quote that I had on the lines that I hate was there's so this woman who at the beginning of the film, she's a prostitute, but these nuns come into America the first time. They have nowhere to stay their first night. And actually, I looked that up. That part is true, that they had nowhere to stay. And they found like a room to cluster and all together. Yeah. But in this movie, her heart's moved for them. And then from that, she provides them a room. And from there, she continues on with them throughout the movie. But she's grieving her past and her sins. And she tells Mother Cabrini, there's not enough water in this world to make me clean.
Yeah.
So what were you expecting to come next?
I think the most obvious thing she could have talked about next was baptism and or just like the saving waters of Christ and washing our sins clean. And yeah, you're right. She just kind of said that.
Well, what she said instead, Cabrini's response was something about, we are both survivors.
Yeah, which had something.
I'm sorry, like, you don't justify yourself.
Right, right. It was a callback to when Cabrini like almost drowned earlier in her childhood. But you're right. There were so many instances like that where like, okay, here's the big finish, and then there's just nothing, and it turns back into yourself. And it was kind of I'm trying to remember what exactly the final line was, but it's whenever she's meeting with the mayor, and the mayor says something like, "You would have been a great man." And I think she says, like, no man can do what I do, or something along the lines.
I didn't like that line.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, actually, there's a lot of men who have these charities, so a lot of men can.
Yeah.
But what I think would have been a better line is, a man could not do what I do like I do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I was thinking, too, about, like, her name is, originally it's, like,
Francesca, right?
Yeah, Francesca Cabrini. But then she adds Xavier in her name, Frances Xavier Cabrini, whenever she becomes a nun in honor of St. Francis Xavier, the missionary. And so it's like, well, he was an incredible male figure that you clearly looked up to. And I think they also kind of missed that in the movie.
Right. Too. And I think that there were things that that men couldn't tend to the hearts of the children in the way that she did.
Right.
And like have this, I don't think that they could tend to them maybe in the same way. And that would look different in her. But that wasn't what the line is. And so that's where I kept seeing in the movie that they would show her type of motherhood that she took on, but I didn't feel like the lines always reflected that.
Right, right, right. And that's where I kind of go back to my initial reaction was like, okay, you're portraying her as a philanthropist. And I like what you clarified earlier, like this was a Christian background. And I think I was so primed to accept it as a Christian movie, and I still view it that way, but there's just so many ways it could have been expanded upon.
Right, and I guess the other film that I kept thinking of during this was Les Mis, which is one of my favorite musicals, films actually of all time.
Yeah.
But part of what I like about it, and sometimes I question, like, would I count Les Mis as a Christian film? But I think Les Mis is actually more Christian than this movie was, only because I think that it addresses Christianity and the role that it plays in people going to heaven more directly than Cabrini does.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. No, that's an interesting comparison, because I did see, I mean, stylistically, the movies, I was thinking of Les Mis as well. And of course, with when she meets Vittoria, the prostitute, like, I mean, so many parallels with Les Mis. I did appreciate about Cabrini, which I think we see that very clearly in Les Mis, is how in, like, throughout our lives, there are going to be many ordinary opportunities to serve Christ in the poor. And like serve those directly in front of us. And they're very ordinary. And I think you see that a lot in Les Mis where, I mean, yes, like Jean Valjean has this huge conversion, but a lot of the struggles that him and the other characters face are struggles that we deal with every day. And so it's, I think, you're right. That might've been a bit more, I don't want to say authentic or genuine in the Christian film sense, but they interact with God on a much more like human basis. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I think what you're saying is like Les Mis is sometimes more direct about its calls to God and to heaven because they're using those words. But it, if I'm understanding correctly, but in Cabrini, it's calls to like the ordinary Christian life and how we would actually exercise our religion and relationship with Christ.
Yeah, yeah. And I think with like Les Mis is they recognize their own misery, and so they keep turning back to God, but they recognize that in the smallest ways. And I think where Cabrini kind of fell flat was like the lines that were said were like they recognize that they're dealing with the same sorts of struggles, but they didn't really say like, okay, so I know who I need to turn to now, which is Christ. Right. Yeah, yeah. So
it was just missing that secondary piece. Mm-hmm. It was somewhat implied, and it left it available.
Right.
But if it's going to be a Christian film, I just would want to. And yeah. You don't have to tell me. I could just see it.
Yeah.
So there were certain times where I'm like, I'm not even asking you to say it, but you can show me, even if you just saw someone getting baptized for half a second.
Yeah. And which could have been intentional, too, with Cabrini. I think we talked about this afterwards, because it's marketed to everyone. And so more than likely, a secular audience will see this, probably not a primarily secular audience, but a secular audience would likely consume this and view this. And so maybe they didn't want to be like too in your face about it.
So it's an open invitation to where it's not knocking you over the head with it. It's just leading the groundwork for
that. Yeah, that could have been intentional just to kind of prime the viewers' hearts for like a greater conversation afterwards.
But, right.
Who knows?
So one of the other themes that came up in the movie is, I guess this is something that we reflected on afterwards, is this tension between government and charity.
Yeah.
And what our response should be to the poor, to the impoverished.
Yeah.
So in the movie, there's the person who's the bishop of her, or I guess the archbishop of New York at the time. He's telling her, don't be asking for money for the government. Ask your fellow Italians.
Mm-hmm.
And he was even telling her not to go to the other communities.
Right.
Which does read in the movie as he's not wanting her to like live out the potential of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But we were kind of discussing what that actually means and where that tension is of relying on the government versus calling people to action on a local level. So,
Yeah. It was funny because that was one of the questions that I was first asked whenever I came to TPBF. Like, what do you think the proper role between charity and government should be? And so that was kind of the back of my mind as I was watching the film, because the obvious answers the obvious options for Cabrini was, I'll go to the state, I'll go to the city, I'll go to these other established institutions for funds. And she does go to the Italian Senate when she goes home at one point. But like her knee-jerk reaction is to turn to government. And I think it's not unfounded. It's what we do today. But it prevents people from coming together and really recognizing who is most needy and who the poor really are. I think we think of like the poor as just this kind of abstract group, this faceless, nameless group of people. And it's easy to fall into that trap when we see government as our benefactor, as the thing that's always going to take care of us. But it was a really good thing that the city and the state didn't give her any funds, because that was how she got to know her fellow Italian immigrants. And then she had two really cool scenes. One was with an Italian opera singer, and she goes to his house and she talks to him, and he kind of bares his soul to her a little bit. And he's like, I'm never helping you. Like he had problems with the church, but it later she goes back with children and they sing in front of his house. And it's a really beautiful thing because they sing in Italian and, you know, that's his native language. And so he's just weeping and moved. And what comes out of that is to raise money for the orphanages and for the hospitals that they wanted to build, was they came together and had like an Italian American Heritage Festival. And so they got to know other members of the community, and they all kind of rallied behind this cause and like developed an affection for one another and truly saw their neighbor as their neighbor and not just someone who also lives in this massive city with me. And then also she's speaking with Dr. Murphy, who is this Irish man. He was the son of an Irish immigrant, and he was the doctor that was always with her in the poor hospitals. And she talks to him like about other ways to raise money for their cause. And I don't know if it was his idea or hers, but I think he helps put together this meeting with wealthy sons of...
It was her idea, but he helps her.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, wealthy sons of Irish, Polish, Jewish, Italian immigrants. And she's like, do you not see yourselves in us? And do you not see what your fathers went through in these, in the poor? And, like, that's when they're like, okay, we're going to help this cause. We're going to join. We're going to give funds to this. And it was much more, like, personal and humane and intimate way to bring good about for this community, as opposed to just turning to the welfare system or turning to government.
And I think something that we have to reconcile as Christians, and this is where I think progressives can somewhat get it wrong. So there's this progressive idea of that goes all the way back to, like, Hegel and Marxist concepts of you're marching towards the end of history.
Right.
And
right.
that there's something that we can do to fix everything in this magical world that's going to end all of our suffering. And as like Christians, even and I think this is something that's just common in all the Abrahamic religions, is this recognition of that there will always be the poor, and we have a mission to care for them. And so something that whenever we just rely on government to fix it, believing that it's just going to go away, it kind of dehumanizes the person who's behind that, versus that what true charity work does, it allows for us to be able to have an experience as well where we humble ourselves and we are able to connect with someone who's experiencing pain.
Right.
And we tie in doing that, because we're empathetic people, we tie our pain and seeing that to others.
Right, right.
And I think whenever we just rely on government too much with these things, well, for one, we just know it's in, like, I guess most conservatives would probably argue that it's not even an effective way to tend to these people. But I think it also allows us to get rid of our own pain in seeing suffering versus really entering into that with them. And as you were saying, in an intimate way.
Right, right, right. And it was a good thing that government was limited and prevented from taking the place of her community members. Because then they fostered this, like I said, this affection for one another. And also you're able to identify with someone who is suffering, because more than likely you've experienced something like that in your own life. And I think that's one really beautiful thing about suffering and misery, is that no one is immune to it. And it can be a very unitive thing. And I was thinking about, like, Aristotle talks about this in the Politics, about like common goods that we share. And because he was kind of pushing back against the argument that private property is a bad thing and should be abolished. And he was like, well, no, you know, like you look at public parks, or look at the downtown streets of Austin. Like, it's just, they're not in the best condition. And because they're public and understood to be kind of shared by everyone, they're like, well, surely someone else will take care of this. And I can just, you know, worry about my own self. Or, yeah, this technically belongs to us, but really, like, it's the state who's going to take care of this. And Aristotle's saying, he's like, no, this is a good thing that we have private property, because then we recognize, like, the duty that we have to it and the responsibility. And we cultivate this on our own. And, like, that helps contribute to human flourishing. And I think, yeah, like, when government is restricted in that way, like, we are more free to flourish and to uplift one another, because we see ourselves in one another. And kind of, I think, going forward a little bit, like, we've all heard about, like, the loneliness epidemic that people are experiencing, and how people feel really isolated, like, now more than ever. And I think it's because we're, like, the idea of the village or the city is just, it's kind of disintegrating. And Aristotle says, you know, like, the polis it starts with the household, and then it goes to the village, and then it goes to the city. And when we have that disintegration, when we don't have this glue, these bonds, like, I mean, the fact that we live in a city of a million people, and more than likely we don't know our neighbors, like, that's a crazy thing to think about, you know? Like, I interact with the same, I don't know, 40 or so people on a weekly basis, but I don't know my neighbor's name. Like, yeah, I'm of course I'm not going to feel some sort of affection towards them, because if something goes wrong, I'm just going to assume that, oh, well, state of Texas or the federal government will take care of them. Like, I don't need to.
Right. You know? And it is weird thinking about the way that I contribute into that. So yeah. I feel like, especially for Gen Z, it's not like you live in a department with so many, like, I guess hundreds of people there.
Right.
So depending on, you know, the complex is going to be huge. And this happened both whenever I was in the dorms and a little bit less, I guess, in the dorms, because you at least go to the same university. But right now I live in an apartment in Austin, and I actually don't know who the people are who live next to me.
Yeah.
And that is a weird thing. If you can live in the same like square mile, or even like, again, the same square complex of so many people, but then you can be entirely alone if something happens.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause we're not reliant upon one another anymore. And I think that has a whole host of reasons why I think we see this breakdown in our society, and we see these feelings of desolation and loneliness. But yeah, it's like, just going back to Cabrini, like, it was, again, it was a good thing that she couldn't get help from this kind of unnamed, or not unnamed, but like this faceless, humanless institution, but she had to get to know the people around her. And that was a lot more effective and lasting. And like, that's how she expanded at the end of the day, because at the end of the movie, it says like all of her hospitals and orphanages like ended up going like around the world. And I think if she had just said, well, I'm just going to rely on the state of New York to help me out, well, then what does New York have to do with China? You know, and that's where she ultimately wanted to end up. But
so that that idea of starting where she did, and like with these Italian people who were attached to her heritage at the beginning of the movie, and this is actually real in real life, she always wanted to end up in China and tending to people there. But whenever she meets with the Pope to approve her mission, he says not the east, but to the west. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a line from real life too, that he told her. So I was glad that made it into the movie. But I think what he recognized at the time was that there's these people who have like the similar heritage, right? These are Italians. These are their kinsmen. And that's where her mission is able to start, is building up that local community. And only, I think, because like you said, she learned to build up this community to be able to support each other, is how she was able to then go to the next one and build the community around it, and the next one, until she did end up eventually in the East and in China.
Right, right. Exactly.
So whenever we're looking at these issues of how do we, I guess, break the cycle and tend to other people, it makes me reflect back on this idea of spiritual motherhood and relating to people in that way, and that Cabrini was able to. So a lot of the audience that we have for the show is going to be women, and a lot of them are still younger, right? So kind of around our age, earlier 20s, maybe even a little bit younger if it's the college age girls. But most of us aren't mothers yet, right? But and some people are never actually called to, I guess, literal motherhood. So how do you think that we can start tending to other people as spiritual mothers in our community?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, to preface it, I was thinking about one of the gospel readings this past Sunday was about when Mary, the sister of Lazarus, you know, broke the perfumed oil and poured it over Jesus. And Judas is like, what is she doing? We could have sold this for however many days' wages. And Christ kind of rebukes him and says, you know, she's doing this for me. I will not always be with you, but the poor you will always have with you. And so thinking about how the poor, like, sadly, that's something that will, like, we will never be able to alleviate poverty and suffering in that regard. But that's an incredible opportunity for us who do have these means and not even, like financial means to care for the poor, because the poor doesn't just mean those who are like financially downtrodden, but those who are experiencing loneliness or like don't have a family or like have struggles elsewhere in their lives, just those who are lacking in some way and are in desperate need of comfort and help. So tying into what it means to be like a spiritual mother to others, I think, gosh, the easiest way is just to spend time with one another. Like, I think about, I have a couple friends, and what they do is, I mean, they're our age, so they're young, they're not married, don't have a family. But they go and they sit with the elderly in nursing homes, and they visit the people that no one comes to visit anymore. And they develop that friendship, and they have, they create these ties and these bonds with these people who don't have the family, that don't have this family around them. And so in that way, like, my friends are able to, like, maybe not, they probably don't see themselves as spiritual mothers, but they're comforting these people who are needy and comforting them who are alone. And so I think that's a really clear example of that. There's a homeless man that's outside of our church, and his name is Daryl, and he's such a nice guy, and I talk to him whenever I see him. And I can't do much for him, but I can provide him friendship, and I can recognize, I can, you know, say his name, and I can recognize the human that's in front of me, and honor the dignity that he has. And just providing that to him, I think, is another really simple but profound way to share this this spiritual tie, like the family that we have within one another. Yeah, I just think spiritual motherhood is just, it's not limited to an immediate family. It's really just whoever is needing this love that comes from a family. But the person like right in front of you that you need to love.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded of, the start in the West. So start with your own people, mm-hmm. and even in your friendship groups, who is needing your compassion and your love.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're able to come onto the show and watch Cabrini with me and go through all of this.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for being on the show. And for everyone at home, this is not the only movie review that we've done. We did Barbie and then a TV show, Ahsoka, and Sound of Freedom. So if this is the kind of thing that you like, definitely subscribe to the channel, check those out. And to learn more about the ways that TPBF is trying to interact with people and lift up our own communities, check out the website. Marie, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
And we'll definitely have you back for another thing in the future. So thank you so much. And to everyone out there, try to engage in your communities. And thank you so much for joining us.